What is Christianity? Christianity is an explanation of all of reality. There's not one square inch of human existence as to which Christ, who is sovereign over all, does not cry out, "My!"
This is Breakpoint This Week, a weekly briefing on faith, culture, worldview, and mission with Ed Stetzer of Wheaton College and John Stone Street of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview.
Ed Stetzer, my goodness, so much news to cover.
So much. So it's a crazy time.
It is a crazy time, and really all things Supreme Court. But I need to give all of our listeners here just a little bit of a heads up. We don't always do this, but sometimes because the stories are so important and our schedules are so crazy, you might have a little bit of background. Not me. I'm settled. I've got...
I didn't make a big deal about this when you did this driving across. Were you in Kansas on the Wilderness? I don't even remember where you were.
I was in Kansas driving as we were recording this program, and you are somewhere in the Midwest recording.
I am driving to Indianapolis, and unfortunately have to do this while we're driving. So forgive us, but big week, John. Supreme Court news. Maybe people have heard about this.
Maybe they have. I mean, it was like one story, then another story, then another story out of the Supreme Court. Now, of course, we all know that a couple weeks ago, we got the decision on the Masterpiece Cake Shop. Very, very important. And the key thing that we talked about there is that this court found the state of Colorado, the Civil Rights Commission, had not given Jack Phillips even a fair shot. And as I'm hearing from legal scholars, many people talked about the narrow ruling in the Jack Phillips case. They didn't touch the speech issue. They didn't touch the freedom of religion issue. And the word is that the Supreme Court handles what the Supreme Court handles, and they don't want to go beyond that. Now, of course, we know that's not always the case. I mean, we saw that in Roe v. Wade. We saw that in Planned Parenthood versus Casey. Both cases that are going to play into our conversation when we talk about Justice Kennedy here in a few minutes. But the first decision that came out this week was the NIFLA decision. Now, that was, of course, something we've talked about here before, where California was basically forcing pregnancy care centers who exist to help women choose life instead of abortion. They were attempting to force them to promote the state-sponsored and state-subsidized abortion services, not only in signs, but even, get this, in a mandated 48-point font for some of these announcements. And, I mean, with just so much crazy overreach.
Right. But for context, I mean, when you go to many businesses, you'll go, there'll be a break room somewhere. And in that break room, there will be some required postings. And those postings might say, that workplace harassment is illegal. It might say, here are your benefits or whatever, your workers' comp. And so in that context, they wanted to require, that was kind of their case, they kind of were required these things. But it's quite shocking to actually seek to compel speech. And of course, the Supreme Court found this to be the case. And actually, some of the rulings were quite strongly worded. But the Supreme Court said, no, you can't compel speech that people who literally have created a ministry, these tend to be ministries, that actually offer abortion alternatives. So in other words, you have literally brought this together for the purpose of opposing something that you find deeply offensive, to then say, oh, you have to put this on your brochure, or you have to put this on your wall. You have to make sure people can see it, font size large enough that they can see it as well. So it really was a strong rebuke of government overreach. Now, again, this is not a done thing. Government overreach continues. We see this at Christian colleges, for example, where I teach at Wheaton College. But government overreach got a pushback here from still a narrow ruling, but with things to come. Now, with Kennedy retiring, the narrowness will be changing. And I think that's going to be an important part of our conversation as well. But I know you were encouraged by the ruling for sure.
No, absolutely. You're jumping ahead. I mean, there's so much to talk about Justice Kennedy.
Sorry.
Let's cover
it. We got to go one major Supreme Court case situation at a time. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I will not mention Justice Kennedy again. I will mention that you forgot to say about Jack Phillips and Masterpiece Cake Shop that I was right about my prediction. But go ahead.
We've covered
frequent
that
listeners
ground.
Frequent listeners of the show know what I'm talking
about.
Well, go ahead.
Listen, I have to just basically say that was the reasoning given by the state of California, that this is in the same spirit as other postings. This is nothing like that whatsoever.
It's not at all. It's crazy.
It's not. In fact, for example, a business might be forced by the government to provide information for their employees. This was the government trying to force an organization to provide this counter information to their very mission statement, not to employees, but to clients, to actual clients with contact information.
It's a bit like a church putting up a sign that says, hey, down the road, there are people who don't believe the gospel, and you can go there too. Yeah. And what I would say is, I mean, that's functionally true, but to require that is an odd thing at best. For me, I was surprised that there were actually four justices who felt that they could defend this as a viable reality. It goes to show just how far we've gone, that there are actually, I mean, we weren't far away from a moment, and actually probably worth mentioning as well, that if we had Merrick Garland on the Supreme Court right now, in all likely, we don't know for sure, but in all likely, that case would have gone the other direction.
No, that's right. And it's interesting, too, on Monday on the Breakpoint podcast, and I hope you're subscribing to the Breakpoint podcast. You can find it wherever
I do.
Right.
All your great podcasts are there, yes.
I have a conversation with Christian Wagoner and Baronelle Stutzman. Now, Baronelle, of course, Arlene Flowers, the florist that we talked about along with the Bakers, her case was sent back to the Washington Supreme Court, which we'll talk about that in just a second as well. But I asked Christian specifically about the narrow ruling in this NIFLA case. Now, of course, we don't mean narrow in the same sense as Jack Phillips. Jack Phillips was a narrow ruling in scope, but an overwhelming majority, 7-2. In the NIFLA case, you had a 5-4 majority, but it was a broad sweeping decision about compelled speech. That was her reasoning, and it made a little bit of sense to me that oftentimes in the Supreme Court, when you have a very narrow ruling, like you did in the Jack Phillips case, and everyone can say, you know, obviously that, you know what, but if you're a government entity like the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, you ought not compare someone, you know, to defenders of the Holocaust, right? I mean, and that's what everyone could agree on. That's why it was 7-2, even though it didn't address the wider issues of speech and so on. The NIFLA ruling did, and it smacked down the idea. And this is why the Jack Phillips case plus the NIFLA case makes an interesting situation for Baronelle Stutzman, and that is that you have, first of all, government entities can't just mistreat someone because of their religious views. That's the Jack Phillips decision. And then in this 5-4 decision, that the government can't compel speech. This is the new frontier when it comes to defending freedom of speech. Not just defending someone's right to say what they deeply believe according to their conscience, but you can't compel them to violate their conscience. And so now you have both of these opinions in law. And of course, the other big thing that happened, as I said, the Supreme Court ruled that the Washington State Court needed to revisit their decision on Baronelle Stutzman. Now, we know what's going to happen because Washington State is hostile and has been hostile to Baronelle. They're going to look and say, oh, we've got no, you know, bigots here, no haters here. And they're going to say, we did exactly right. And it's going to go back to the Supreme Court. That's what makes the Justice Kennedy decision that much more interesting going ahead. And that's what we got to talk about next.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. So you can bring up Justice Kennedy, but I can't. You had to work it all that around. You also should mention that in referring back to the Washington State Supreme Court, that they said to consider in light of their ruling related to Masterpiece Cake Shop as well. So there is a sense that they saw, the U.S. Supreme Court, saw some connection between what they had decided in the Masterpiece Cake Shop in the Baronelle Stutzman case as well. Now, of course, you're right. It doesn't mean that they've ruled on this, but it goes back to the Washington State Supreme Court. And probably by the time, if it comes back to the U.S. Supreme Court, now I'm going to bring up Justice Kennedy's retirement.
Oh, well, listen.
So the timing.
The rule wasn't we weren't going to talk about Justice Kennedy. It was like we got to take this in order. I mean, this was a crazy week. I mean, this is going to go down in history as one of the most significant weeks in the history of the Supreme Court. I mean, we're talking about the most critical issues of our day. You're talking about the fallout from the Obergefell decision.
And Obergefell is the decision that legalized same-sex marriage.
That's right.
People are aware.
Of course, authored by Justice Kennedy. And a lot of people really thought, too, that Justice Kennedy was really trying to do some legacy building here, right? That he was the one whose decision in Planned Parenthood versus Casey led to the decision in, I can't remember the case name, the anti-sodomy case in Texas. And it was Antonin Scalia at the time that dissented in Justice Kennedy's opinion in that anti-sodomy case, you know, basically striking down anti-sodomy laws in Texas, saying this is going to pave the way for same-sex marriage, among other things. And of course, 11 or 12 years later, Justice Kennedy authors the majority opinion in the Obergefell decision, overturning state-level law, 30-some states that had state-level policy in terms of marriage being between a man and a woman, voted in by the people, and this basically mandated same-sex marriage across America, which created then the situation that Jack Phillips faced, as well as Baronelle Stutzman, as well as Sweet Cakes by Melissa, an Oregon bakery. We've got the videographers in Minnesota. We've got the calligraphers in Phoenix. That's a state-level or a city-level, actually, ordinance there. And of course, you know, this is just creating all kinds of issues. And really, Justice Kennedy was the source of a lot of this. And a lot of us were waiting, saying, okay, is he going to retire? Is he going to not? And I tell you what, a lot of people...
So did he retire? Because we haven't brought that up yet. So officially. Is it okay to bring that up now?
Do people really not know this? All right, listen, you're listening to Breakpoint This Week. I'm John Stone Street, along with Ed Stetzer, who's on the highway in Indianapolis. And we'll be right back to talk specifically about Justice Kennedy's
retirement.
Thanks for joining
us. John has decided that we can now speak on this retirement. So we'll be back on the other side.
We invite you to visit Breakpoint.org. While you're at our website, be sure to browse our online Colson Center store of great books and other resources. And you can link up to our social media sites like Facebook and Twitter.
All right, let's go. Justice Kennedy announces his retirement on Wednesday.
He retired?
I think you went to the well one too many times with this.
I think I did, probably.
Yes, you
That's
did.
Okay. It's not the worst time.
So this is so fascinating. This is something that many people speculated on. Many people predicted the opposite. I talked to legal experts after the Jack Phillips case saying, okay, is this it? Is he going to retire? And people, I don't think so, you know? And people were really going back and forth on this decision. But Wednesday, he submitted his resignation from the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, of course, as the New York Times, lead headline was, at least on their podcast, The Daily, the day after, is the swing vote has retired. And of course, that's what Justice Kennedy is known for, the swing vote. I also want to bring up that he's known for a whole legacy of decisions when it comes to social issues, specifically abortion and same-sex marriage, in which this conservative, nominated to the court originally by President Reagan, after two failed nominees, the famous, you know, Robert Bork situation.
Robert Bork, sure.
Then the guy who followed him, I can't remember who that was, but his nomination was withdrawn because of a marijuana scandal, which I had to be reminded of this week. I had forgotten all about that. But then Justice Kennedy, and he was called by President Reagan a true conservative. Now, very often he was the 5-4 majority, the swing vote for the conservative position when it comes to the rights of corporations, when it comes to economic issues, when it comes to, traditionally conservative, when we're not talking about social conservative issues. But on the social conservative issues, he was the 5-4 swing vote the other direction. This is a big, big story.
Indeed. And I think it's a reminder for many who listen, evangelicals and others who care about issues. Particularly of life, let's talk about for just a moment, but also issues of religious liberty, religious freedom, freedom to dissent from what is now pretty much the majority view in culture, is that ultimately elections matter, elections have consequences. I wrote an article not that long ago, actually it was kind of between the time when Mitch McConnell had decided not to vote on President Obama's Supreme Court nominee, very, very controversial decision, and really in many ways unprecedented. And to say, no, we're going to wait until the election and then President Trump was able to appoint Gorsuch instead. Well, here's the deal. I mean, if the election had gone the other way, and again, people can disagree and people can not be excited about other things that President Trump has done. But if the election had gone the other way, you would now have a generational majority that would not be sympathetic to concerns of religious liberty, that would not be concerned about issues related to life and abortion and more, that would be in a very different place. And so I think this is an important thing. So I wrote an article, you may remember James Carville on the Clinton campaign said, it's the economy stupid. George Stephanopoulos talked about it. It's the economy stupid. And I wrote this during the time, and I said, people need to realize that for many, many evangelicals, it's the Supreme Court stupid. And it's the defining reality. The Supreme Court has a level of influence and power that is really not described at this level in the Constitution, but has become sort of a, well, through judicial review, that kind of looks over everything, that, as you mentioned, overrules 30 states on same-sex marriage. Now, since that time, actually, most of the population of those states have shifted, and we actually see that the culture has shifted decidedly in favor of same-sex marriage in many, many places. But the reality is they did this in Roe v. Wade as well. And so now, with a court that is so influential because of the power of judicial review and more, we now sort of live in a time when these two Supreme Court justices may be central to President Trump's legacy. And I will say quite clearly, as a person of faith who cares about life in the womb and beyond the womb and all those involved in birth and moms and babies and dads and all that's around that issue, and as one who cares about religious liberty, who, I got to tell you, I am thankful that President Trump is making these decisions. Of course, I don't know who he's going to appoint, and I don't imagine this is going to be known immediately. I don't imagine this will be known by the time this radio broadcast airs. But if it's someone in line with who he's released before, I think ultimately this is a good thing for religious liberty. It's a good thing for people who care about life and many other places and ways.
No, that's right. And interestingly enough, I did get an email from one of the spokespersons in the Trump administration with a short list. It's not really a short list. I think there was something like 30 or 40 names on them. But these are names also that President Trump released during the campaign.
That's right.
And also, this is going to be interesting. I mean, we know the political divide in America is huge. We knew the midterms are going to be hotly contested. This changes everything. I mean, this is going to raise the political rhetoric at a whole new level. We've got certainly Democratic senators saying, you know, we will stop this. We've got a host of MSNBC saying, you better do whatever you can to stop this. And so this is going to be, you know, hot and heated. In fact, one of the candidates, and forgive me for not remembering her name, we talked about this story, but a Catholic woman who was nominated for a district position, and she's actually on this list as a potential Supreme Court nominee. I mean, this is famously, you know, when she was told by a Democratic senator during her confirmation hearings, the dogma lies strongly within you, or something, some kind of weird, you know, leftist Obi-Wan line there that was just kind of bizarre, but not based on any judicial decisions that she had made, but just based on the fact that she's serious about her Catholic faith, and assuming, and we heard Bernie Sanders say something similar in another confirmation hearing for a cabinet post, is that, you know, look, this is something, maybe Christians shouldn't be in the public square. And we're going to hear a lot of that language coming forward. I mean, this is going to
be a hotly contested
issue.
That was actually Judge Amy Barrett.
Amy Barrett,
right. What she said was, the dogma lives loudly within you. And it's interesting. I actually wrote an article on that. We'll put it in the show notes. Because in doing so, I mean, this became kind of an acceptable statement to make. Now, one of the things that, again, the legacy of President Trump will certainly be is he has been quietly remapping the judiciary.
Huge. Yeah, absolutely.
And not just the Supreme Court. I mean, we're talking district court, circuit court. So many courts have been moved in that direction. And I would say, I get that the over-the-top reaction, you know, we've seen the Handmaid's Tale outfits showing up at the Supreme Court and more. These are not draconian exceptions. These are, let's find space and place, for example, for people of sincere religious belief who now dissent from the majority view on same-sex marriage. These are not, we're going to turn back the clock. These are. Let's. For example, it's very unlikely that this court is going to overturn Obergefell. It's not very unlikely this court's going to overturn Roe v. Wade, for that matter. But can there be some reasonable restrictions that take us out of the category of North Korea and China and just a few other countries when it comes to our very radical abortion laws? You can count on two hands the number of countries whose laws are as radical as ours are. So are there some places for some reasonable restriction? I want to think that ultimately, yes, there are. And I want to acknowledge that that doesn't mean that the left, which right now is quite vociferous about this, that the picture that's painted is a total reversal on so many things. I wish there would be some changes on some of those things, but the reality is our culture has shifted in many, many ways.
And I want to revisit the Roe v. Wade discussion, because that's something we're hearing on both the right and the left about the future of Roe v. Wade. And I wrote on that on Friday, the Breakpoint that was aired on Friday, and we'll link to that as well. Come to breakpoint.org, click on the link there on the homepage that says resources mentioned on the radio and podcast, and we'll link you to all of these articles. In fact, on Monday, I've got another Breakpoint coming out. Friday was basically the resignation of Anthony Kennedy, what that means for life. And on Monday, it's the resignation of Anthony Kennedy, what that means for religious liberty. And I want to talk about both of those issues here when we come back. But I do want to say something that is, when you talk about President Trump reshaping the judiciary, we need to say something else about that, which is this. He wouldn't be able to reshape the judiciary without years and years and years of work of building up a strong bench in the judiciary. And we need to look at groups like ADF and the Blackstone Fellowship and the Federalist Society and groups that have, and guys like Robbie George at Princeton, who have trained a new generation of people who are in line for this. I mean, you know, a lot of times we talk about, like, you know, there's not a deep bench when it comes to conservative politicians. I think that's true. There's not a deep bench. But I tell you what, there is a deep bench when it comes to conservative judicial nominees. And this is years and years and years of work, multi-generational thinking, and we're starting to see it pay off. Well, let's talk about Roe v. Wade and religious freedom and Justice Kennedy when we come back. You're listening to Breakpoint This Week with Ed Stetzer and John Stone Street. Stay with us.
You can learn more about Breakpoint and the Colson Center for Christian Worldview when you visit breakpoint.org. That's breakpoint.org.
Is Ed Stetzer here with John Stone Street? Justice Kennedy retired. I thought we should mention that before the program has ended. But John, as you look to the future, one of the things we talked about is, you know, there's probably not going to be overturn of some things. Now, again, I think as a Christian, I would like to see laws put in a different direction and rulings going in a different way. But the reality is there is, and again, President Trump may even have the opportunity to appoint another justice. I mean, there are some justices who are older, but again, Kennedy was the most likely to retire. So what, as we kind of move forward as a culture and a society, what do you see happening? Where do we go on some of these issues legally in the future? Are you encouraged now even more so?
Absolutely, I'm encouraged. And in fact, you know, it's fascinating to me. I mean, working with religious freedom groups over the last 10 or 15 years, like we have at the Colson Center, I mean, we saw this dramatic shift against religious liberty, for example. And, you know, 3-4 years ago, amongst these groups that were, you know, putting blood, sweat, tears, money, and energy and a lot of hours into defending religious liberty, there was a real discouragement, certainly in the years just leading up to Obergefell, certainly after the Windsor decision, which was the precursor, also authored by Justice Kennedy, to the Obergefell decision, and then even the state-level policies, laws, even city-level ordinances. And these still continue to be, you know, dealt with and fought, and they will. But there's a whole mood change here. I mean, it really is. And I think what we're going to see is probably not the Obergefell decision reversed, but I do think we're going to see some really strong carve-outs for religious liberty going forward. And the Supreme Court is going to say, now that Justice Kennedy has said in Obergefell that there's animus, you know, amongst those who oppose same-sex marriage, and now he said in the Masterpiece Cake Shop, and even in the NIFLA decision, Clarence Thomas, that there's animus against people of faith. Now we've got animus going both ways, and I think that's what we're going to see is hopefully space created. The bigger question, though, I didn't say the bigger question, but another question that to me is just as interesting is what happens with Roe v. Wade. When the religious liberty thing, I mean, you can see Barronell's case going back to the state of Washington, Washington patting themselves on the back, saying we did everything right, sending it right back up. But now, Kristen Wagoner, you know, who's also Barronell's attorney, just like she was Jack Phillips' attorney, going to make
right, those,
Alliance Defending Freedom, is going to make those same arguments about compelled speech, about artistic talent being forms of expression, but it's going to be to a different Supreme Court. It's going to be to, you know, a nominee that more than likely is not going to be nearly as soft on the LGBT issues as Justice Kennedy was. So I think we're going to see real movement there. When it comes, however, to Roe v. Wade, you know, we have pro-life leaders saying we're going to overturn Roe v. Wade. I agree. I don't think we've ever been as close to overturning Roe v. Wade as we are right now.
Well, most people look at it as bad law, but I would like to see Roe v. Wade overturned. But the challenge is the Supreme Court does not like to overturn itself, even when there's been a turnover in the justices. And so I think the question is will it? Well, I'd like to say, I'd like to live in a different world where abortion, the laws of the land, were different here where we are. And so could it happen? Yes. Is it likely? I don't think I mean, most observers that I've read and seen and heard say it's not likely. But what I do think is likely is actually to find some way and some space to bring some reasonable restrictions.
Yeah.
And what I would also say is it's an opportunity. You know, windows open and close. And if there's going to be more restrictions on abortion, which I think most Americans want and have not been able to because of Supreme Court rulings and then some district courts as well, is what I would love to see is this is an opportunity for Christians to step in. Coming back to the decision, the NIFLA decision, for abortion alternatives, for adoption, for a culture of life, let's continue to persuade hearts and minds. Let's continue to care for unborn children, born children, mothers, and more. And in doing so, ultimately, if we do have the opportunity for solutions that are legislative or through the courts, that at the same time, we are there as a loving alternative to abortion and an option and opportunity for people to adopt, to have prenatal care, to have care for infants and help along the way.
Well, let me agree with that wholeheartedly with a slightly different prediction. I think certainly I would like to see more restrictions. I think the closest we're going to get to overturning Roe v. Wade is going to be a decision that sends these decisions back to the states. That's one of the big beefs about how Roe v. Wade was decided. I think you're right that the court doesn't like to overturn itself. However, part of this advancement would be, okay, restrictions on certain procedures and after so many weeks, but the other would be allowing states to make their own laws on this. And that's something that I could see happen. Now, if that does happen, your advice is exactly the same. And that is that the pro-life movement is just getting started. Because now, as localized as the pro-life movement has become, now we've got to get mobilized politically at the state level and the local levels. And that's what I hope will happen. Well, we're out of time. You've been listening to Breakpoint This Week with Ed Stetzer and John Stonestreet. Thanks for joining us.